Broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, and happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman live on your radio. Hard-hitting news that networks refuse to use, no doubt, starts now. This, my fellow Americans, is the broadcast for November the 24th in the year of our Lord, 2021. This is our one of two, and our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio and the traditions of our founding fathers. Yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen, we use the blueprint for liberty, the supreme law of the land, the Constitution for the United States of America. That is our guide, that absolutely we're convinced the checks and balances brilliantly put in place by the founding fathers. One of the great peaceful solutions we still have at our fingertips. As you know, we reject revolution. We stand for peaceful restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. And it is not a freedom-loving Friday, but it is a faith-filled, family-oriented Thanksgiving Eve day. Is that what you call it? Welcome to the broadcast. Hope you're all doing absolutely fantastic. And it's hard for me to remember because you know what? I've been celebrating Thanksgiving all week long, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm hoping you've been doing the same as well. It is Thanksgiving Eve day. And Thanksgiving is a wonderful, wonderful time. We're not going to be live on Thanksgiving, folks. Rarely am I out of town for Thanksgiving, but this time we're going to spend some special time with some loved ones. And so I'm not going to be live tomorrow. Normally I'm live on holidays. I feel like you're listening to the radio or part of our big radio family, and I like to spend time with you. So we usually are live on these holidays, but tomorrow we're not going to be live. And I know somebody would say, that's foolish to announce, Sam, then nobody will listen. We got a great rebroadcast for you, though. And Friday will, of course, be live. So we got a lot going on. And a lot of times people want to celebrate a holiday before the holiday. So today we would do our Thanksgiving show. Tomorrow we wouldn't be live. You know, I would prefer to do Friday, the Thanksgiving focus more. Why? Because after the holiday, and I can tell you about the memories that we made and some of the things that have gone on for us and our family and some of the things that I'm grateful for and a whole lot more. The other reason is because it extends the holiday. You know, whenever there's a great holiday, I like to extend it, right? And so if we kind of carry that over into Friday, in my mind, it extends that holiday just a little bit, which is always nice. So count on that Friday. And today we got a lot to cover, though, because things are happening. Even though it's Thanksgiving and the rest of us want to take a break from the news and spend time with the family and do all those things, the news cycle continues 24/7 in America, sadly so, but reality. For example, what does a week mean? Why do we have a week? Why is 7 days the, big discussion point or whatever? Apple News had a link to an Atlantic story talking about why do we have 7 days anyway? And they didn't really talk too much about the Bible. They kind of said there was no real logic for 7 days. I think the main reason we have 7 days in our society is because God ordained 7 days. 6 days did he work, and the seventh day did he rest. And to me, it comes from God Almighty, and the week makes entire sense. But nevertheless, there you have that. Welcome to the broadcast. Hope you're doing all just great and ready to celebrate. And if you don't have someone to spend Thanksgiving with, reach out. Reach out to church. Reach out to work. Reach out to school. Reach out. There's somebody you can spend time with, that's for sure. And that's what Thanksgiving is all about, is getting together and being grateful. Grateful for our freedoms in America. Grateful for our food. Grateful for, so many blessings do we have in the greatest country on the face of the earth. It's amazing. And we should pray for and ponder that, you know what, others who do not live in America can, well, their nations can be great too, to where they can have freedom and stability and safety and prosperity and all the wonderful hallmarks of the greatest country on the face of the earth. We pray for those folks. All right, so without further ado, a recap of yesterday's show. We were live yesterday as well. And we talked about this, 80-person, 25-vehicle, just absolute destruction of Nordstrom in a place called Walnut Creek, California. What a sad tale that was over the weekend. But it continued with 40-plus looters targeting California Bay Area stores for the third straight day in a row. Jack Phillips with that piece, Western Journal. Just a scary scenario, folks. These people are armed with crowbars. They're violent as all get out. Where's the mainstream press? Where's the researchers on the ground in California that are going to break this down and say, here's where their money's coming from. Here's who they are. Here, you know, here's these 40, 80, whatever people. Here's their records. Here's their professionals. They pulled this off with such precision, say the cops. So who's going to dig into how this is all happening in the details, huh? I hope somebody will soon. I'll tell you that right now. All right, we also talked about incredible detail. Documents show that Bill Gates and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has given $319+ million to media outlets. This incredible news group that I've never heard of before sifted through 30,000 grants in the company's database, can now reveal that over $319 million has been given to all kinds of media outlets. Alan McLeod with the incredible article on this one. And it's kind of an interesting story because it breaks down who got how much money even. They're calling it bankrolled, too, which is kind of interesting. It's called Mint Press. Alan McLeod doing a great job over there about that. Very detailed about who got what money. And, man, just millions and millions and millions of dollars going to the mainstream press. Going to government radio, government TV, going to all kinds of universities, all kinds of newsmakers. It was just insane. If you notice, though, Liberty News Radio and Loving Liberty Radio Networks didn't get a penny. And I'm not asking for a penny from Bill Gates. I'm just making an interesting point that why is Donald Trump, is Donald as rich as Bill? Oh, I guess not even close. But Donald's wealthy enough. Why is Donald begging me for money to run his commercials? I can't give him money because I'm spending all my money funding radio, folks. But I will run Donald Trump's radio ad for free. But I find that interesting how Donald Trump asks me for money. The conservatives who have plenty of money ask me for money literally on the daily. But then Bill Gates just quietly behind the scenes funds his radio and TV and newspapers and everything else. So does Jeff Bezos. But the conservatives just don't seem to do that. Very strange how that works. Anyway, that was Hour 1 of Liberty Roundtable Live yesterday. Hour 2, we had our guest on, Mr. Alex Newman. This was the simulcast with Brighty on TV of the Sheriff Mac Show and Liberty Roundtable Live. So it was me and Sheriff Mac together on radio and TV. And we had Alex Newman on with us. He's an author, journalist, educator, and a broadcaster. TheNewAmerican.com is one of his great partners, if you will. We also talked about the book that he highlighted called The Great Prison Break. The Supreme Court Leads the Way, G. Edward Griffin. Incredible book, by the way. We also talked about a second book. It's called Crimes of the Educators. How utopians are using government schools to destroy America's children. Now, this story or this book was written by Sam Blumenthal along with Alex Newman. They co-authored that book, Crimes of the Educators. Incredible book written several years ago by Alex and Sam. Great stuff, by the way. And we talked about what is the number one threat to America. Alex Newman says government education. Boy, howdy, is he right about that. What is the number one threat to America? Sam Bushman, I put the Federal Reserve. And I think both of those answers are great answers. We mentioned that it's a target-rich environment, to say the least. We then had our guest on, Ted Nugent. Yeah, Motor City Madman Ted. Uncle Ted released his new single, Come and Take It. He says the song is an incredible, powerful rock anthem. It's a patriotic rock anthem about our right to keep and bear arms. Our sacred First and Second Amendment rights. Anyway, he referred to HunterNation.org. That's where he does a lot of his great philanthropy work and more. Come and Take It, by the way, is the first single from the upcoming album by Ted Nugent called Detroit Muscle, which is slated for release on April 29th. Anyway, there you have that. It's the all-American defiant battle hymn, he says. Come and Take It. What is the number one threat to America? We asked Ted Nugent as well, and Ted said apathy. Boy, howdy, is he right about that? I don't know if it's the Federal Reserve, apathy, the education system. All three are great answers, ladies and gentlemen. We got a lot of work to do, that's for sure. Well, anyway, Joe Biden orders 50 million barrels of oil to be released from the strategic reserve. His goal is to cool surging prices. Epic Times with that report. And I kind of find that interesting. Now, the archives of the simulcast of the Sheriff Mac show and Liberty Roundtable Live can be found in video on Brighty on TV, audio at libertyroundtable.com. Spread the word. Check that out. Because it was a great interview with Alex Jones and Ted Nugent. We're kind of making a difference together, aren't we? All of us working so hard. And, you know, it's amazing who's willing to participate with us and who is not willing to participate with us. I tried to get a hold of Mike Lindell, and he was just too busy. He says he's not taking any more interviews. But I find that fascinating because he's spending time on other interviews. So why he won't jump on the radio with us? Mike Lindell doesn't have time, but General Flynn does? Uh-huh. Very interesting. And why he won't do it, I just don't know. It's the MyPillow guy. And we help him by, you know, when we run the news at the bottom of the hour, USA Radio News, they have Mike Lindell as a sponsor there. And so we kind of help fund that. We don't get a penny in return, of course. It's only Bill Gates and Jeff Bezos, the liberal guys that fund the media, the conservative guys, you know, Donald Trump, Mike Lindell, and all those other guys. They're not interested in funding us, I guess. Kind of an interesting dichotomy that we find ourselves in. Nevertheless, we will continue to march on. We will continue to tell a tale of liberty. And we'll do it on, what do you call it, the Widow's Might Radio Network? That's what we'll do. Hard-hitting talk at your fingertips. That's a recap of yesterday's broadcast. Still available at libertyroundtable.com and lovingliberty.net. I am Sam Bushman. A lot of hard-hitting news that networks refuse to use. Straight ahead on your radio.
I'm 7 years old. I'm sitting here in the corner having a time out until Mom comes to talk to me. All I did was cut my sister's hair. I was just trying to help. I guess Mom didn't like how I did it. In a minute, she'll be back and ask me if I know what I did was wrong. Maybe I shouldn't have cut her hair. And she'll say we all make mistakes because we're just learning about stuff. And she'll give me a hug and we'll end up talking about more stuff.
No matter what you talk to your kids about, love is what they'll hear.
I really like Mom's timeouts, and I think she likes them too. Yeah, I think they help her remember how much she loves me.
A thought from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Visit us at Mormon.org.
As you all know, Roe versus Wade has resulted in some of the most permissive abortion laws anywhere in the world. For example, in the United States, it's one of only seven countries to allow elective late-term abortions, along with China, North Korea, and others. Right now, in a number of states, the laws allow a baby to be born from his or her mother's womb in the ninth month. It is wrong. It has to change. Americans are more and more pro-life. You see that all the time. In fact, only 12% of Americans support abortion on demand at any time. Under my administration, we will always defend the very first right in the Declaration of Independence, and that is the right to life.
All right, back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. You know, in the Kyle Rittenhouse case, not guilty on all counts, innocent, if you will. On all counts, the jury basically felt like it was a clear-cut case of self-defense. That one was winnable big time, and the liberals are freaking them, and they're out of their minds over that win. The Charlottesville case, as we've been tracking as well, not so clear-cut. CBS News, jury awards $26 million in Charlottesville Unite the Right Rally civil case, CBS News. We're just going to play their report on it and then talk about it for a minute. Here they are, CBS.
The jury has reached a partial verdict in the trial of the men who organized the 2017 Unite the Right March in Charlottesville, Virginia. They found the defendants liable of civil conspiracy for planning the deadly rally, but the jury could not agree on every count. Joining me now for more on this decision is Nicole Skanga. She's a CBS News Homeland Security and Justice reporter. Nicole, thanks very much for being with us. So what did the jury find the defendants liable of?
Elaine, good to be with you. Now, 24 organizers of the Unite to Right rally more than 4 years ago, including some of notorious white supremacist leaders, including Richard Spencer, Jason Kessler, Christopher Cantwell. Well, they were found to have engaged in conspiracy to intimidate, harass, or harm ahead of that deadly August 2017 weekend. Now, the 11-member jury, as you noted, did not reach a verdict on two federal conspiracy charges, but they managed to find that every defendant here was liable for civil conspiracy. That is under Virginia state law. Now, the jury then went on to award more than $25 million in damages against 12 individuals and five white nationalist and neo-Nazi groups. Two of the nine plaintiffs listed in this case here. And now nearly half of that money is owed by James Fields Jr. You might recall he is serving time behind bars, serving life behind bars after he plowed his car through a group of counter protesters, killing 32-year-old Heather Heyer and injuring scores of others. The jury found that all of the defendants here, again, engaging in conspiracy to harm, harass, or intimidate, and five, beyond that, five defendants here also found liable for engaging in racial, religious, or ethnic harassment or violence. Among the defendants are some longstanding hate groups, including League of the South and Vanguard. They all owe $1 million apiece, Elaine.
And Nicole, what exactly were the two counts they could not come to an agreement on?
Yeah, those were federal conspiracy charges. And if the goal here was to bankrupt the defendants, well, certainly the attorneys for the plaintiffs did just that. But the heart of this case really did center on those federal statutes, counts one and two. The law itself, the statute itself, known colloquially as the Ku Klux Klan Act, dated back to 1871 in the Reconstruction era. And it was designed at the time to protect African Americans in the South, but it was unearthed for this civil case to try to prove under federal law that the defendants here conspired, entered into a conspiracy to commit racially motivated violence. For the plaintiffs, unfortunately, they did not reach a verdict. The defendants, of course, celebrating this fact. And in the note to Judge Norman K. Moon, the federal judge here, the jury saying that they were deadlocked on these counts, that they did not believe that they were going to reach a verdict on those two here. We got sort of a preview of that yesterday when they had sent a question to the judge asking, well, what happens if we can't all unanimously agree on all of the counts? So this being a partial verdict that was reached, Elaine.
You touched on this, Nicole, but what were the reactions by the defendants and the plaintiffs to the decision?
Yeah, well, Karen Dunn and Roberta Kaplan, who are two of the attorneys, the main attorneys for the plaintiffs here, did call this, a victory. They said, quote, we feel that justice was served today. There's going to be accountability for the people who did this. They did also announce, though, at an impromptu press conference that occurred outside this federal courthouse moments ago, that they were going to try to relitigate count ones and two. They said, maybe if they brought this in front of a jury perhaps that was less eager to get to Thanksgiving dinner with their families, that they think they will be successful at getting, the verdict they wanted on that federal conspiracy statute. So making that announcement today, I will say that Amy Spitalnik, who's the executive director of the civil rights group behind the lawsuit, also made very clear in a statement to reporters here that that group is committed to ensuring that the plaintiffs can collect on these judgments and that defendants don't escape liability. There's a lot of concern, Elaine, given that many of the defendants here are flat broke. They have said as much during the course of this trial. In fact, we know Richard Spencer and Christopher Cantwell defended themselves because they could not afford lawyers. So concern that perhaps it's going to be difficult for the plaintiffs to collect on all of these damages. So here we're hearing from the plaintiff side saying that they're going to do the best they can. But we did also hear from the defendants' attorneys in this case, including James Konolik, who represents two defendants and the group Identity Europa. He said he's going to try to reduce the damages in future court hearings, try to cut them down in size potentially.
And Nicole, this is such a high-profile trial. What kind of precedent does this set?
Well, Elaine, we talked about this a little bit earlier before, but really the heart of this case, which was those federal conspiracy, statutes here, the fact that there was no verdict served in those could set a precedent. You know, some of the Capitol Police officers, believe it or not, and lawmakers are currently using the very same statutes, in their own civil suits that are being brought to bear in the aftermath of January 6th. Using that statute, in charges against former President Donald Trump, Rudy Giuliani, Steve Bannon, some Trump campaign and administration associates. And so possible that, some of those attorneys for the plaintiffs in those cases are really looking at this trial perhaps for a sense of what is to come. Now, we will see whether or not, as I noted earlier, that the plaintiffs are hoping to retry, these two counts on this federal statute. It remains to be seen whether or not they will be successful in really using this 150-year-old statute to try to seek damages in as part of a civil case.
All right. Nicole Skanga reporting from Charlottesville for us. Nicole, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Jury awards $26 million in Charlottesville Unite the Right case, ladies and gentlemen. $26 million. Now, there's several things about this. CBS News reported on it. I think for the most part, they were fair. A lot of the words they used weren't fair. White supremacists and this and that. And I believe that a few of them may have had, worse intentions than others. I really think that this was a slap lawsuit, though, and that's what you got to really kind of remember coming out of this. It means strategic lawsuit against public participation. And they said right there, Nicole and those in the interview literally said, hey, if their goal was to bankrupt the defendants, they got it done, $1 million each. Most of them aren't going to be able to pay that. They may never even get all their money. But the chilling effect of the slap, if you will, worked. How much public participation will you get going forward when everybody's afraid to peacefully assemble? You can say that some of these people committed conspiracy. Well, how do you have conspiracy on the state level? But on the federal level, they couldn't come to an agreement. See, very nuanced in the law. And I have a feeling the instructions that was given to the jury, or maybe if the jury asked the judge questions after, or some of the details and the nuances of the laws are what allowed the federal charges to be, I don't know what you want to call it, stalemated, but yet the state charges to stick. That's a very serious, serious concern. The other question about conspiracy, it's very difficult for me to assess this, because if we're going to say all the defendants are guilty of a conspiracy based on state law, if I'm in Utah and I proceed an event that I go to with some planning or whatever else, how do I violate a state law if I'm planning it from another state? There's a lot of nuanced, strange things here, but here's the bottom line. You had multi-million dollar lawyers for the prosecution, and you had just ragtag band of bunch of people who didn't have money, who didn't have attorneys, and it seems like they didn't really have a strategy. They literally took the abuse of the prosecuting attorneys for literally days. I guess it was a couple of, 17-plus days? And then they literally took a day to defend themselves. So I don't think they put a very good defense together. And I kind of highlighted this at the time, how concerned I was about, are you going to highlight a lot of this? For example, were there FBI agents? Were there agents from state police or Charlottesville police or the sheriff's department? Or were there provocateurs in the crowd that had ties to government? I don't know that that was brought up, but it certainly ought to be brought up, because we know that happened in the Ammon Bundy cases. We know that's happened in January the 6th. And now even the CBS News folks tying it to the January 6th issue, they all know. This is Get the Patriots time, isn't it?
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
As President Biden assured Americans on Tuesday, saying America's energy prices will be going down in the future after releasing 2.5 days worth of oil from the strategic reserves, Republican Senator John Kennedy on Fox News has this analogy.
I think that one of the differences between people and dogs is that dogs would never allow the weakest or the dumbest to lead the pack. President Biden's energy policy is both weak and dumb.
NASA launched a mission to deliberately smash a spacecraft into an asteroid, a test in case humanity ever needs to block a giant space rock from wiping out life on Earth. The DART is going to test its theory. It blasted off at 10:21 p.m. local time Tuesday on board a SpaceX rocket from Vandenberg Space Force Base in California. USA Radio News.
So right now may be the perfect time for you to rethink how you pay for health care, and here's why. Not only is it time for open enrollment for a lot of people, it's also when you can join MediShare and save even more than usual. For the typical family, switching to MediShare saves about $500 a month, which is a game changer for a lot of people. Think what you could do with that. But if you join right now, MediShare is waiving their new member fee, so that's another $170 you'll save. And MediShare is really different. It's a community of Christians who share each other's healthcare bills. More than 400,000 people are members, and they've shared over $4 billion in medical bills. So, yes, they can handle your bills, too. This may be the time to make the switch. Join before November 30th for the additional savings. It's so easy to find out more. They're great to talk to. In fact, you can get a price within 2 minutes. Here's the number. Call 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
As we get ready for the Thanksgiving holiday Thursday, Americans were asked what their plans are for the feasts of all feasts.
A new survey conducted by Axios and Ipsos found 67% of U.S. adults are planning to see friends and family from outside their households during the upcoming Thanksgiving holiday. That group includes 73% of Republicans, 70% of Independents, and 63% of Democrats. 31% of respondents say they see a large or moderate risk in gathering with family or friends for Thanksgiving this year, which, according to Axios, was significantly down from the 64% tracked in 2020. The poll conducted between November 19th and the 22nd surveyed 1,023 general population adults. The margin of sampling error is plus or minus 3.3 percentage points. From the USA Radio News Phoenix Bureau, I'm Tim Berg.
We are USA Radio News.
I want to dedicate this song to Mr. Rupert Murdoch.
All right, back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Bushman on your radio. We're talking about the Charlottesville scenario. Jury awards $26 million in the Charlottesville Unite the Right rally civil case. CBS News breaking it down. It's a slap lawsuit, ladies and gentlemen. Strategic lawsuit against public participation. And boy, howdy, will it have a chilling effect, to say the least. Now, they even talked about, ladies and gentlemen, all 24 people involved in conspiracy, state laws violated, state law of Virginia. Most of them aren't even from Virginia. And if they did that planning out of the state of Virginia, how do you violate state law when you're not even in the state? Well, Sam, because you planned it and then you went into the state later. So it violates state law. If that is the case, ladies and gentlemen, how do I know that I'm not violating state laws anytime I visit any other state? Let's say I go to California and I go to Disneyland. How do I know that something couldn't be tied back to me violating the state of California's laws before I even get to the state? Well, Sam, this is conspiracy now. Okay, how do you have a conspiracy where they're locked? They couldn't decide the federal conspiracy charge discussions, but the state, they could. So something's very, very unique indeed here. And I believe that the prosecution has a ton of money. The defense didn't have any money, first of all. But the defense did not do a good job. And I highlighted this from the start. I expressed dismay, to say the least, on your radio about why are they not defending themselves? Why aren't they not bringing up all these issues in the first place. And it needs to be tied to the January 6th situation. How many of the people were at January 6th were at the Unite the Right rally, for example? I don't know that anybody's documented that for me, but can we find like-minded or, you know, characters that were at both places? Were there agent provocateurs by the government? See, I don't know that we have the answers there. Nobody's prepared to answer this for me, sad to say. But I really think that's a relevant discussion. All right, now Donald Trump said there were both troublemakers and good people on both sides of the conflict. I think that's really, really kind of important to understand. I really do. That hasn't been focused on much because, again, if all the defendants are guilty, you've got, what, 9 groups? You got 24 defendants in this situation? They're not all equal. And the jury really highlighted that case where they say 5 were singled out that were this, and, you know, most of them were that, and 12 were guilty of this, and, you know, some weren't. Very interesting how this all kind of broke down. But I really want to know if there were provocateurs there in Charlottesville. Were there provocateurs at the Kyle Rittenhouse riots, etc.? How about in Georgia, where there's a big meltdown there? How about January the 6th? Are all these cases linked? And I happen to believe the answer is a clear, resounding yes. To what degree? I don't know. But I know this. In the Ammon Bundy cases, Ammon was starting to find out who was who. Which government provocateurs did what? You got discovery. And in an effort to jettison discovery, the judge threw out the case and looked at the FBI and said, you're guilty of virtually criminal mischief. You're guilty of withholding exculpatory evidence. You're guilty of all these different things. And, well, the judge shut down the case in Nevada. Well, in Oregon, the jury said Ammon Bundy was not guilty. Well, we found out in those cases there was agent provocateurs through the whole thing. Government had FBI agents right in the mix with the people that, okay, well, we're discovering the same reality. Chris Carlson and I, a couple of Fridays ago, broke down how you've got these people who are provocateurs in January the 6th. They're on video. Somehow the government had them on their most wanted database. Now they've been magically taken off that database. We've got them in video. We've got their names. We know who they are. We know their ties. We know quite a bit about them. Well, is this the case for Charlottesville? See, none of that, as far as I can tell, has really been explored or brought to the table. So I personally think the defendants did a horrible job defending themselves. I'm not attacking these people because I know some of them. And I know they're not all the same. I know some of them are way more extreme than others. Right? For example, what's a patriot? Is that a white supremacist? Are all patriots white supremacists? No, but all white supremacists are patriots. Okay, whatever, right? But everybody's not the same. Everybody doesn't look at it the same. They say, well, Sam, you're a racist. And my response is, I've got a couple of friends who you could say have ties to that crowd. But I don't believe my friends are racist. I really don't. I don't believe that I'm racist. I really don't. I do believe that we all have a little bit of, whenever something's different from ourselves, we have a little bit of hesitation. But is that because of racism, or is that just normal, that when things are different than you're comfortable with, it's odd, it's hard to navigate, right? Doesn't mean that you want any harm to come to anybody. But the other problem is this, the racist views that some of these people may or may not have, I will say this, that you're not guilty of anything for your thought, your conscience, are you? Because if you are, we got another big concern on our hands. Did these people really commit conspiracy for violence? Well, here's the next question that I would have. One, I want to know what agent provocateurs were there. Secondly, though, I want to know how complicit the police would be if they took these two groups and meshed them together. One group had a permit, the Unite the Right people. The other group that showed up didn't even have a permit. But how complicit would the police be when they merged these two groups together and literally forced them together? That needs to be explored. So I hope a few of these defendants have the guts to come back and sue the other side. We probably won't because we never get any money together and the conservatives aren't organized and they'll probably never get this done. But they ought to. I want to know what the police, all the way from the local police in Charlottesville, all the way to the sheriff's department, to the mayor, to the police chief, to the state, you know, police, all the way to the FBI. Were there provocateurs there? Was even if there may not have been provocateurs, was there kind of a complicit idea that, you know, we think these two groups won't harm each other if they're together? What inspired the police to allow them just to be together? All precedents in former situations should have told us that's a bad idea. Did the cops know that and let that happen? Did they encourage that to happen? Was that part of the plan to make that happen? See, who's plumbing these questions into reality? Who's finding out the answers to this? And I think a lawsuit against all the police, all the law enforcement, all the groups there to see if there was agent provocateurs on one hand and see if there was an ignorance which led to problems on the other hand. But then I would also sue the other side, though, okay? Who all was there that committed violence on the other side? Remember, Donald Trump made a very wise statement, I believe. Trump, there were both troublemakers and good people on both sides of the conflict. Well, who were the troublemakers on the, quote, Antifa, Black Lives Matter, on, I believe, the insurrectionist side? Who was there who committed violence who did not even have a permit to be there? And who's going to sue them to create accountability? Who's going to sue them to drag out the provocateurs in their groups? Maybe it wasn't the cops that were provocateurs or all the way up to the FBI, like in the Ammon Bundy case or like in the January 6th case. Maybe not. But there were certainly Antifa and Black Lives Matter and everything else there. Who were the provocateurs there? Because, again, all people are not alike. And so there must have been extreme folks on that side that got into violence and were there to cause violence. And then I'm sure there were people who, for example, that support Black Lives Matter or Antifa that weren't really violent. They just believe, hey, Black Lives do matter. They don't realize the umbrella organization that foments violence and promotes anger and hatred and division. Because there's a lot of people, for example, that believe in Black Lives Matter, but they don't really understand what they're believing in. There's a lot of people that may believe in the extremist white supremacist view, but they don't really understand, you know what, it can get violent, it can go wrong. There are racists out there. You know, they may just think, well, hey, we support the white view and white people are good, but they may not understand or go as far as others may go. Let me give you a case, proof, and point to make my argument, shall I? Kyle Rittenhouse backs BLM or Black Lives Matter during an interview. Says that race had nothing to do with his case. It had to do with the right to self-defense. Now, I agree that his case had to do with the right to self-defense. I support that view. But this idea that he backs Black Lives Matter, well, he must just genuinely not want to be called a racist. Because, again, Joe Biden literally calling him a racist, from what I understand, right? Well, then Kyle basically wanting to, like everybody does, James Edwards of the Political Cesspools book highlights this so well, racism, schmacism, basically highlighting that, you know what, everybody wants to run from being a racist. So if Kyle's called a racist, then he's like, no, I back Black Lives Matter. But does he back the concept that everybody's life matters and we're just highlighting that black people's lives matter? If that's the case, fine. I do agree black lives do matter. Every life matters. But I don't back the ideology put together by Black Lives Matter and Antifa on their websites and on their materials and what they've stood for over the last couple of years. Nothing but rioting and pillaging and plundering and violence and hatred and etc. Does Kyle really back that stuff? I doubt it. Hopefully I've made my point. Quick pause. This is Sam Bushman on Liberty Roundtable Live.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads, a divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is again the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
Yeah, Joe Biden accuses Kyle Rittenhouse. I'm sorry, let's start over. Kyle Rittenhouse now accuses Biden of malice and defamation. Well, you know what? I think Kyle Rittenhouse is right. Kyle Rittenhouse slams Joe Biden for defaming his character when the president tweeted out a video suggesting that the teen is a white supremacist. It's actual malice defaming my character. Understand the facts before you make a statement, Kyle trashed Joe in saying. So this is interesting. You got an average citizen attacking the president of the United States blatantly, but the president acting out of character and literally calling Kyle a white supremacist. Now, I don't know what Kyle's beliefs are, but this is kind of what I mean. When you start to just act like everybody's the same, it's not true. Out of those 24 defendants in Charlottesville, everybody has different viewpoints, different understandings. I doubt they're all guilty of the same things. And so they tried to rope Kyle into that, and he fires back pretty boldly, nobly, and independently. But he makes, in my opinion, a fundamental, crucial mistake, which is denying that you're a white supremacist, okay? And the reason that that is the case is because, you know what? What if he is a white supremacist or not? What is a white supremacist? How far do you go to say someone's a white supremacist? If I believe that I'm white and God made me that way and I'm happy with my race, I'm happy with my heritage, I'm happy with my, quote, ethnicity, does that make me a bad guy? What if I even go so far as to say I want more white people on the planet? Me and my wife want to have children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. We want our posterity to be large and great. Is that a bad statement? See, I don't think either of those are bad statements at all. In fact, I think they're reality. Now you say, well, Sam, what if you're Mexican or you're, you know, Latin or you're Asian or you're fine? You should hope the same thing for your people and your race and your ethnicity as well, right? I would hope you would. I would hope you'd be proud of your heritage. But see, that doesn't mean that I think that my whiteness or my race or my ethnicity is, makes me better than anybody else, that I'm somehow a superior being. The only superior being that I know that walked the planet was Jesus Christ himself. Wasn't he Jewish? All right. I'm not necessarily saying we're all supposed to be Jews or Jewish. I'm just making a point that, you know what? I believe we're all God's children, and we should behave like it. We should be kind and considerate and respectful to one another, right? Anyway, Kyle Rittenhouse accuses Joe Biden of defamation. I agree, and I think that Kyle should sue the socks off of Joe. That's what I really think. And you say, well, Sam, wow, you're promoting civility. Why do you think you should sue the socks off of Joe? Because I think it's unprecedented for the President of the United States to literally double down and attack a little kid. You say, he's not a little kid, Sam. He shot some people. He's a grown man. He's over 18. When this all went down, the guy wasn't even 18 years old. He was 17 years old, people. Okay? And I don't know why, Trump gets abused for saying there were both troublemakers and good people on both sides of the conflict. I think that's a fact of reality, but he got slaughtered for it. Well, now Joe Biden literally attacks Kyle Rittenhouse and says, or intimates that he's somehow kind of a white supremacist. And then Kyle Rittenhouse, to run away from the attacks of the president of the United States, goes, oh, wait, hey, I back BLM. Well, does he really back BLM? Does he back the real ideology, the real agenda of Black Lives Matter? Because if he does, that's a serious problem indeed as well, right? When do these things become terrorism? See, the conservatives are all considered terrorists over the, quote, January 6th event, right? Whether you were there, whether you weren't there, you're all kind of tied into this wide casted net of you're all guilty of terrorism to some degree. See, this is what I mean. This isn't true. I'm sure there was provocateurs there at January 6th that were evil. Most people there were good. The people that didn't go aren't guilty at all. Well, they weren't even there, for crying out loud. How do you get that's guilt by association to the nth degree? See, but that's what we're facing. All right, let's get a Ron Paul report before the end of the hour. I want to get this in. Ron Paul on Thanksgiving week. Let's go ahead and dial that up, Cameron. Ron Paul coming up here. This is indeed Liberty Roundtable Live with the Ron Paul Report.
Hello, this is Ron Paul with your weekly update for Monday, November 22nd. President Biden's approval numbers are dropping like lead. According to the polls released last week, only 36% of Americans approve of Biden's performance as president. From COVID to the economy to foreign policy, Biden's numbers are in the tank. 3 out of 4 Americans are dissatisfied with the way things are going in the country today. Inflation is sky high. Gasoline prices are higher than they've been since Obama was president. And the store shelves are empty just in time for Christmas. And the president's illegal and immoral vaccine mandates may result in millions leaving their job rather than accept the experimental COVID shots. That should be no wonder for supply chain problems in the U.S. Biden's ability to drag the economy back from the brink is very limited, and the Democrat brand is looking more and more like poison as the U.S. moves into midterm election season. That can be dangerous. When presidents make war, they find that political opposition dries up and the media rolls over in gratitude. In Biden's eyeing foreign actions to bolster his sagging support back home. Traditionally, progressives have been wary of aggressive U.S. foreign policy, but 4 years of phony Russiagate lies have left a good deal of the political left enamored with the CIA, the FBI, and warmongering woke military officers, just like Joint Chiefs of Staff Mark Milley. Many of them will likely cheer a military conflict. When it comes to foreign policy, the Biden White House continues some of the worst policies of the previous administration. The U.S. continues to sail warships through the South China Sea. When such saber rattling provokes Chinese concern, the Chinese are condemned as the aggressors. Similarly, the U.S. just sent warships into Russia's backyard in the Black Sea to perform military maneuvers. Imagine Russian war games off the Texas coast in the Gulf of Mexico. And then the U.S. administration attacked Russia for massing troops inside Russia. The U.S. media is, as usual, complicit in the propagandizing the U.S. population. Thus, Russia is said to be massing troops near Ukraine without the explanation that near Ukraine is actually within Russia. So Russia is threatening war by holding military exercises within its own borders. But the U.S. is entirely peaceful when it sends warships thousands of miles away to the Russian border. On Friday, the Russian military intercepted U.S. warplanes reportedly just 12.5 miles from the Russian border. The U.S. and NATO continues to deliver lethal weapons to the government in Kiev, which only emboldens Ukrainian President Zelensky to ratchet up the conflict in eastern Ukraine. The U.S. foreign policy and military establishment exists in an echo chamber. They believe their rhetoric that the rest of the world is eagerly awaiting its orders from Washington and that the U.S. has the moral right and the ability to tell the rest of the world what to do. This sets the stage for a potentially catastrophic miscalculation in the U.S. administration. Already, Russian President Putin complained last week that the U.S. takes its red lines too lightly, no doubt referring to Ukraine. Biden may be calculating that he needs...
To repeat the announcement, press 1.
All right, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Bushman live on your radio. Hard-hitting talk at your fingertips always, ladies and gentlemen. There you have it, the Ron Paul Report, and you say, wow, Sam, you transitioned from Charlottesville and the case with Kyle Rittenhouse and the situation with January 6th, and all of a sudden you switch to this, quote, international policy discussion with Ron Paul. What's up with that? Well, I would submit to you that it's very similar, isn't it? Internationally, you got all these factions, and it's very hard to know who's who. It's very hard to know who's advocating for what, and it's hard to know who's really genuine versus who's the good guys and who's the bad guys. And we're starting to see a lot of that, as far as I can tell, locally. In other words, in America. It used to just be kind of foreign affairs was so confusing, but America is pretty clear. Now you're starting to see kind of a different scenario where you got agent provocateurs everywhere. All right, an agent provocateur is somebody who incites others to do things. It's somebody who commits or acts to entice another person to commit illegal or rash acts or falsely implicate them as to ruin their reputation or entice legal action against them. Do you think that was done in Charlottesville? See, I think that there's a great chance that that would be the case, but no one's plumbed it. Tucker Carlson talks about Jan 6th being instigated. Amen. Agent provocateur, serious, serious business, right? Anyway, there you have it. I kind of find it fascinating. Agent provocateurs are a real threat to our way of life, ladies and gentlemen, because any time you and I want to stand up, anytime you and I want to speak out and do something now, we're going to have to be in fear that they're going to find anything we say or do ahead of time, and they're going to call it a conspiracy to whatever. Right? Think about that. Thomas Massie literally played before the House of Representatives and Attorney General Merrick Garland, there was an informer planted by the FBI to urge Trump supporters to breach the Capitol on January the 6th. Well, I bring this all up, folks, because we're starting to see the same tactics internationally speaking. As far as I can tell, we're starting to see the same tactics used domestically. Yeah, it's scary to think about what we've gone to. Isn't it scary in your mind, too, where we're going? And I believe that a lot of the international efforts to fund and fuel both sides of a war, those same tactics are being used in America right now. And I'm telling you, you better be very, very, very careful of that, because the implications are shocking. Now, as you know, Joe Biden's a pervert. We called him Uncle Joe, Grandpa Joe, whacked out pervert Joe. He's always put his hands all over women, whether they be somebody else's wife, all the way down to little kids. The guy's a pervert extraordinaire. When he was running for office, he even talked about how little kids would love to come up and feel the hair on his legs. I mean, weird stuff at the swimming pool with Joe Biden. Well, now it turns out that Joe Biden gets bopped by a little girl. He leans in and he touches her and invades her personal space, and she freaks. He touches her, Western Journal with the piece, and the girl just smacks him. Wow, I don't mean to laugh at this kind of stuff, ladies and gentlemen. It is indeed serious, but at the same time, you got to laugh so you don't cry, huh? All right, ladies and gentlemen, I know it's Thanksgiving Eve, and we haven't talked much about Thanksgiving. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving, though. We'll talk about it on Friday in more detail. That next hour, though, we got all kinds of stuff. Things are going on in the country. Another guy was at a protest. We'll tell you all about it in seconds next hour. Hour one of the can, two coming up, libertyroundtable.com, lovingliberty.net. God save the Republic of the United States of America.